Chapter 32. By the weak light of the blue moss, their mysterious captors marched them away from the scene of the terror bird attack and deeper into the forest, calling for a halt just before dawn. Daven's eyelids begged to close and his limbs hung heavy. The frantic ride to Longford and lack of sleep pushed him to the brink of exhaustion. Mr. Page and Mr. Goodwin trudged along as if every step were in sticky mud. Kianla led them forward, carrying his rifle in one hand and a spear in the other, while Ta'anla brought up the rear of their little party. They led them north and farther from civilization, the opposite of what Daven had hoped. He wanted to get back to the road, get to Brighton and procure some horses. If he could get the gun back from Key, he could likely scare the two women off. But in his exhaustion, the risk was too high. It took little discernment to see the ease and familiarity with which the women handled their spears. They walked with a confidence of predators, heads high, bodies muscled and ready to act at the slightest provocation. Their feet unconsciously avoided the ensnaring branches and rocks, while Mr. Page's seemed determined to find every one. Besides their spears, each woman carried a bone knife at her hip, daggers not unlike the ones underneath his coat. He supposed he could attack them, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. Scare them off was all he wanted to do, but if he needed to fight his way back to save Ariane, then he might change his mind. But not now. Sleep was his enemy, and one he wished to surrender to immediately. They halted next to a deep forest pool, water bubbling out of an outcropping of mossy rocks. The sky paled in a clearing of the canopy, a clear day, a morning.
"Take your rest, brown man," Tar said.
"Where are you taking it?"
Daven asked.
"We are on an urgent errand and cannot delay."
Key grinned.
"We may let you go, once we are sure you won't get killed. Sleep, brown man."
Daven thought the appellation hardly fair. Their olive skin was just as tanned as his, though less weathered. The two women, clearly twin sisters, stood by the pool and talked in low tones. Their meticulous efforts to look identical astounded him, and he wondered at their purpose. They packed their backpacks the same. Their hide clothing was tailored the same down to the rough stitch. It even seemed their hide jerkins had a tear in the collar, at the same place. Once the sun was up, he would search for more details. As it was, Key's handling of his rifle was his only method of identifying the difference between the two. He lay on the ground, head on a branch, and sleep took him immediately. Dreams of his encounter with the Sabre Cat near Frostbourne played through his mind, though in the dream he saw the event through the eyes of the animal, staring at himself through the browning strands of grass. A pathetic man stood behind that tree, rifle to his shoulder, a man who had lost his strength and courage. As the Sabre Cat, he crouched, haunches low, ready to run the miserable figure down. Water splashed on his face.
"Up, brown man, eat and get your strength."
One of the sisters walked away from him. Daven pushed himself up, mind still mired in sleep. The strong but pleasant scent of mint wafted through the clearing. But to Daven's shock, the North people had multiplied. The woman who woke him was Ta'anla, he surmised, as Key, still holding his rifle, was speaking to an older man near the edge of the pool, where a variety of foods waited on a lengthy strip of unrolled leather. The Awur Katan numbered at least 10 now, mostly men standing post around the pool. Like the women, the men wore jerkin-like vests, but without the ties to hold them together in the middle. The men were all bald, possessing the same ice-blue eyes as Key and Tar. Spears, bows, and knives were in hand or in sheaths, and they regarded their captives with blank expressions. Save for the man with whom Key conversed, all were younger than Daven was or about the same age. Like Kiantar, they walked and watched like hunters. Escape by intimidation had become impossible. Ta'anla roused Daven's two companions, both groaning at the unwanted pull from slumber. Daven helped them to their feet, both dismayed at the addition of new members to their party. Mr. Page mumbled, "Dirty savages," under his breath and shrank against a tree trunk, as if scared one of them might stare him to death. Mr. Goodwin followed Daven toward the food.
"What do they want with us?" the old man asked. "What are they doing in Bittermarch?"
Daven shook his head.
"I cannot fathom why they would be so far south. They don't seem disposed to be friendly, I'm afraid."
Dried apples, jerky, and a broad nut Davin didn't recognize beckoned to his empty belly, and he sampled from each one. The meaty nut tasted sweet, and he wolfed down several, the two sisters looking on. Key had given the rifle to the older man, so Davin could no longer tell which sister was which. One spoke.
"Do not eat too many of those, brown man, or you will not sleep tonight."
Davin stood. "I beg of you to let us go on our way. We must get to Belshire on urgent business. If you want the gun, then take it as payment for our release." The older man frowned and stepped toward him.
"I am no thief and want nothing you possess."
He held out the rifle, and Davin retrieved it.
"Key, did you read this man?"
"Yes, there is no dishonor in him. His name is Davon. He is flame-touched, as is the old man."
Now that he knew who Key was, Davin stared at the two women, trying to find some way to distinguish them. The Northman grinned, wrinkling two tattoos at the edge of his mouth and one between his eyes.
"It is easy to tell them apart, Davon. Key is the pretty one, and Ta the funny one.
I am Jujal. They are my daughters."
He turned toward them.
"Key, read the other two. Davon, explain to me what business you have in this place."
"This is the Queen's land," Davin replied. "I might ask you the same."
Jujal stared at him, eyes hard.
"Some places cannot belong to anyone, Davon. What do you do here?"
"There is some conspiracy against Belshire. The man, Justice Page, the one with the wounded head, holds the secrets to expose it. The men who want those secrets buried want him dead before we get him back to Belshire. We fled here under duress. Will you let us go?"
"We'll see,"
he answered. Key stepped to Mr. Goodwin, who scratched his unkempt sideburns, clearing out detritus that had collected there during his repose. As she had done with him the night before, Key touched her forehead with two fingers and then placed them over Mr. Goodwin's heart, standing nose to nose with him. After a moment, she stepped back, face concerned.
"Well?"
Jujal prompted.
"He is as bitter as the wasting wind, but his cause is just."
"His war?"
Jujal asked.
"Anger. He fights it with drink."
"The other one?"
Justice Page's eyes shot wide, and he skirted away from Key as she approached. Two of the sturdy Aur Khatan men grabbed his arms and held him in place. Justice whimpered at her approach.
"Keep away!"
But the hands on his arms held fast, and Key repeated her ritual. Her face turned to disgust, and she stepped back and spit in his face.
"This man is poison, vile poison."
"His war,"
Jujal prompted calmly.
"Greed. He has lost. It rules his heart. Let me kill him."
"No,"
Davin interjected. "He deserves death. But we need him so we may find others that deserve the same fate and free those who may be falsely accused." Jujal nodded.
"Come away, Key. I am convinced that Davin and his companion are part of a worthy cause, and we will escort them to the forest edge unharmed. First they must be fed, bathed, and scented as befits the hospitality of our people."
Davin closed his eyes in relief. "I thank you, Jujal. Are you a hunting party?"
"No. The hunting is poor here, unless you seek the dens of predators or enjoy the meat of the sloth. Our business is our own."
Davin nodded in gratitude. He knelt by the pool, shoveling water into his face. One of the women stepped forward.
"All the way in, brown man."
Planting her foot on his rump, she pushed him in. The pool was deeper than he was tall, and it was cold. He pushed back up to the surface, his coat and boots dragging him down. He surfaced just in time to hear the laughter die down, the twin who had kicked him in smiling at him mischievously.
"I am sorry, brown man," she said, "but you stink all over."
After thrashing around for a few moments, he found a place shallow enough to stand. He removed his coat, boots, and knives and threw them on the shore at the woman's feet. Her eyes went wide.
"Ta, Jujal," she said, "come see."
So that's Key, the pretty one. Davin watched as she removed the knives from his discarded belt, holding them up to admire them. He had killed the saber cat from which he extracted the teeth shortly after his marriage to Emile. It was a young male that had tracked him and Cyril for nearly 2 miles. He had sharpened the fangs, hardened them with resins that seeped into the pores, and then sharpened them again. He used the softened hide of the saber cat to wrap the hilt, capping the pommel with smoothed domes of obsidian rock. Ki, Ta, and Jujal admired his work, and while they spoke, Davin finally found what he had been searching for. Both Ki and Ta sported a spiral tattoo emanating from their navels. Ki's circled left, and Ta's circled right.
"Brown man," Ta called, "where did you get these? Did you buy them from the Aowakatan?"
"I fashioned them almost 3 years ago after I took a saber cat in a hunt."
"Did you kill it with your weapon?"
Ki asked, a hint of disdain staining her tone.
"With my rifle, yes."
"This is good craft," Jujal said. "Who taught you?"
"I taught myself as a boy," Davin said, hauling himself out.
"I will trade my blue moss for the both of them," Ki offered. "I saw your eyes on it. It is very handy in the dark."
"No, thank you."
"Just one of the knives, then," she said.
"No, the daggers have great value for me."
"But
that will do, Ki,"
Jujal said.
"Send him. And Ta, get the other two in. We need to leave soon."
Ki looked disappointed about the daggers.
"Remove your shirt, brown man."
"What?" She bent down, rummaging through her pack.
"Remove your shirt. You must be scented."
"I don't see that."
"Hush, brown man,"
she cautioned, rising with what appeared to be a small gourd.
"It would not be wise to offend my people, seeing that you are outnumbered. The scenting of the pale mint makes the wearer invisible to the nose of predators. It is customary to wear it before any journey or any hunt. Besides, it would help you not smell like the backside of a mammoth."
He could suffer one more indignity if it would help get them out of the woods without a spear in their backs. He undid the buttons of his shirt and removed it while Ki opened the gourd, dipping her fingers in the pale salve. When she looked up, she dropped the container.
"Jujal!"
she yelled, stepping back, face wide with shock. Her tone silenced everyone, eyes of the warriors turning toward them, postures tensing.
"What is it now, Ki?"
he asked, turning around. Ki pointed to the three scars from the saber cat attack running down his chest. Jujal's brows furrowed and he stepped forward, inspecting the marks.
"How did you receive these wounds?"
"I was hunting a saber cat. My weapon misfired. The saber cat knocked me down and then scratched my chest, as you see here."
"Was it a female?" Jujal inquired.
"Yes."
"And why did she not finish you? Did you kill her with your knives? Scare her off?"
Davin's mind raced. These Aowakatan seemed amazed, or maybe even worried. It was just a wound. "No, she watched me for a moment, roared to the wind, and left. It was a frightening ordeal, and I am lucky to have survived it." Ki turned to her father.
"Is he Kodo Kim?"
Jujal threw her a meaningful look and then turned back to Davin.
"I will send men to escort your two companions to a place of your choosing. You will come with us to Junkar."
"To where? I need to go with my companions. They are defenseless, as you see."
"You come with us, willingly or by the spear,"
Jujal said. His face had lost the carefree friendliness it had possessed just minutes before.
"My sons will deliver your companions to safety."
His sons? This wasn't a patrol or a band of warriors. This was family, albeit a family with an apparent aptitude for fighting. Davin weighed his options. He couldn't have Justice Page and Mr. Goodwin wander into Brighton without his help. The Lord and Lady Brighton were implicated in the scene. With any luck, the Aowakatan's business with him would be short, or he could escape them in the night. Hightower would have to do. "I will agree to go with you if you deliver Mr. Page and Mr. Goodwin to Hightower to the east." Jujal nodded his assent, and the tension in the clearing melted away.
"Send him, Ki. And Ta, finish with these two. Let's break camp."
Ki returned to him, retrieving her scenting gourd.
"Arms up, brown man."
While the appellation was the same, the tone was different, quieter, more reverent. After dipping her fingers in the viscous substance, she applied it to the center of his chest and back, finishing with his underarms. "What is Kodo Kim?" he asked. "And where is this Junkar you are taking me to?" Ki replaced the gourd in her pack.
"Junkar is the home of the Aowakatan, the last stronghold of our people. The history of the Kodokim is lost to you?
Davin retrieved his shirt, pulling it on. He had to admit that the mint smell was an improvement.
I have never heard the name. There are four primal forces.
Yes, Davin said. Fire, water, air, and earth. That I know.
Don't interrupt, Key scolded. The primal forces created the Kodo, a blending of all four in the form of a great beast. It is the fifth primal force, a child of the primes. As with the other forces, the Kodo may choose one to embody its force. You call the chosen of the primal flame, or the eternal flame as you call it, Lord Ember. The chosen of the Kodo is Kodo Kim.
It was just an average female saber cat that scratched these scars into my chest. Hardly a great beast.
The Kodo may appear as she wishes, brown man.
Davin shook his head. This was a waste of time. He needed to get back to Ariane, defend her if the courts had charged her. He gathered his bag and his gun. Tar was dragging Mr. Goodwin out of the pool, Mr. Page already having rolled himself over the edge, leaves sticking to his soft, wet flesh. Even if I were this Kodo Kim, what good would it do for your people? Key crouched, repacking her belongings.
The Kodo Kim can find primal forces. It can move any of them as well. It was the ancient murderer Cretus who sought to destroy the primal forces. The Kodo Kim at the time hid them before Cretus murdered her.
Devon had only heard that Cretus had banished the worship of the primal forces when he united the northern tribes long ago. He had actually sought to destroy them. Was destroying them even possible? But if only the Kodo Kim could find and move the primal forces, how did the eternal flame come to be in Joris Pulsifer's cooking pot? Key smirked.
Figure it out, brown man.
Davin saw where she was going. You're saying that Joris Pulsifer was Kodo Kim? She shook her head.
No. Joris Pulsifer didn't pull the eternal flame through the Bitter Winter Mountains or across the Cloud River.
The bull?
Your head is a little frozen, brown man, but I see a thawing in your eyes.
So you're saying this Kodo Kim found the primal fire and then arranged for Joris to find it?
But a bull is, well, an animal, not a man. And so is the Kodo. No more questions.
Davin shook his head as Key wandered off to help her sister scent his two shivering companions. He had never been a student of history. The years he should have spent in school, he spent trying to save his estate from destitution. The great bull that had pulled the sacred flame to Bittermarch was a national symbol. He knew of no other law that would suggest that it had been anything other than a docile beast that had chewed straw in a pasture for the rest of its existence. Mr. Goodwin, scented and bathed, shuffled over, looking like a drowned rat. The water had plastered his bushy sideburns to his face.
I don't like this, Davin. What do these savages want with you?
I don't know. But listen carefully. They have agreed to see you safely to Hightower. It will take about 3 days for you to arrive. When you do, Lady Hightower may be there or she may be imprisoned.
Imprisoned?
He asked, brows furrowing. Yes, her clerks falsely implicated her in this scheme that Mr. Page is involved in. In either case, at Hightower, you should find a Mr. Saunders. He knows me. He is an old soldier and he can advise you best on how to safely convey Mr. Page to Belshire and the Lord High Sheriff. Do not delay. When the Aur Kattan has done with me, I will make for Hightower and then Belshire as quickly as I can. Mr. Goodwin nodded.
Very well, though you will owe me a bottle of rum for having to babysit Mr. Page.
Davin shook Mr. Goodwin's hand. Done. Feel free to administer whatever justice you see fit to get him to talk. The old man grinned.
You know, I wouldn't spare that filthy man a moment of pain. I just hope when they drown him, they let me crank the cage down into the water.
Davin nodded and the party split in two. Jujal, his two daughters, and two of his sons took charge of him, while the rest shepherded Mr. Page and Mr. Goodwin away from the clearing, heading east. Which way, Key? Davin asked, throwing his rifle over his shoulder.
North, out of the forest and into the mountains. And I am Tar.
No, you are Key. Her eyebrows raised before she turned and led the way toward the primitive heart of the forest.